This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees at 7:33. A majority of the furloughed West Virginia National Guard members and support staff are returning to work this week because of a movement in Congress to extend military pay to reserve members. But the state's top-ranking Guard official says a return to work doesn't mean those members and the overall safety of the state won't continue to be affected by the federal government shutdown. Ashton Mara reports.
The Guard in West Virginia will overcome obstacles and we'll make things happen to take care of our people in this state, but we shouldn't have to operate this way.
Adjutant General James Hoyer made his plea to Congress during a press conference at the West Virginia National Guard headquarters in Charleston, saying it's time to put an end to the federal government shutdown.
We are starting to experience degraded readiness in the West Virginia National Guard as a result of this. There are 53 other National Guard organizations across the country that are experiencing the same problems. So if you look at that in a holistic approach, we're starting to really affect our ability to protect our nation and our homeland.
Money, he says, is a major part of that problem. Money to pay for employees, facilities, and supplies. As Congress prepared for the federal shutdown last week, they passed House Resolution 3210 to continue to fund the military. However, Hoyer says the resolution was interpreted by the Department of Defense to mean only active duty members. In order to keep some 389 military authority employees working or state employees whose salaries are reimbursed by the federal government, Hoyer and his team began postponing infrastructure maintenance projects around the state and shifting the money to cover those salary costs. And those costs have added up to around $300,000 a week.
I've only got a $16 million state budget. And the longer they go, the longer I wait for the reimbursement. So we can only go to a certain threshold of pain. And so right now, we can go till the 16th at noon, unless we sit down and come up with another project that we push back.
After the 16th, and without another source of funding, should the federal shutdown continue, Hoyer says the state may have to furlough those workers. As for the 1,150 federally funded civilian technician positions who were furloughed beginning October 1st, Hoyer says nearly 1,000 of those returned to work this week. That return came after Congress lobbied for the Department of Defense to loosen the restrictions on that same House resolution. Guard and Reserve employees will now also receive pay for their return to work that began Monday. But Hoyer says, again, until a budget is passed, he has no idea how long it will take for that money to actually come. On top of salary issues, Hoyer says his Guard members haven't been able to train, keep up vehicle and aircraft maintenance, and provide services to active duty families and veterans. Without keeping up on all of these, he says should an emergency occur, it will take the Guard longer to prepare and respond.
One way or the other, West Virginia Guardsmen will be where they need to be to take care of the people of West Virginia. Now, it might be in a different fashion, and it's going to be a hell of a lot more painful for us in the Guard to get to where we need to be. Is that fair to the men and women who go out and do that? That we have to put them in a position that they have to go that extra above and beyond when we don't need to be in that position?
Hoyer added there are three new military helicopters for the Guard that should have been picked up on October 1st to replace aging state equipment. As of now, there are no funds to move those helicopters, leaving the Guard in short supply should there be an emergency. That and similar issues, Hoyer says, will lead to delays in response as they try to come up with new ways to deliver supplies or conduct rescue missions. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara. In Charleston.
This is West Virginia Morning at 7:38. Dense fog this morning, giving way to sunny skies today. Temperatures in the 60s and 70s.
Support provided by the West Virginia Symphony Orchestra, celebrating its 75th anniversary season and performing Copeland's Appalachian Spring at the Clay Center October 18th and 19th. Details at wvsymphony.org. Support is also provided by the Charleston Ballet, presenting On the Appalachian Trail October 18th and 19th at the Civic Center Theater. Details at thecharlestonballet.com. And support for NPR comes from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, working to ensure all Americans have access to health care at rwjf.org.
This year's State Filmmaker of the Year is West Virginia Public Broadcasting Zone John Nakashima. He talked to Benedicio about the journey he's taken and what it means to win the award.
For more than 30 years, John Nakashima has made documentaries at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. But he's also done more. He co-edited the cult classic film Chillers and worked on animated films like The Griffin and the Minor Canon, which is based on a book of short stories penned by Frank Stockton. Nakashima is now being honored by his filmmaking colleagues with the state's award for Filmmaker of the Year.
The best reward is to know that people are watching your better work. That's really the best award. It's really great to be recognized. I'm in a line of people who've been recognized by that award. It's just nice. You know, it's just a nice thing. Because, I mean, I hate to say this, but it's like publish or perish. It's that kind of thing. So, you know, what I did last year was great, and that's my past. But now I have to do something else.
Nakashima is not a native West Virginian. He grew up in Iowa, one of five children, the son of a doctor and a nurse. He moved to West Virginia in 1975 because he wanted to work at a small PBS station. His brother was a professor at WVU and told John about the job. When looking at his entire body of work, Nakashima says his favorite project was the 1995 documentary Mountaineer. This film examined what it meant to be a West Virginian and looked at the stereotypes of people here.
My father and mother was mountaineers, and they was raised, you know, just like I was. They was raised to do for themselves. Mountaineers are always free. It means not only a freedom of expression, but even a physical freedom. A sense of freedom. I love the mountains. I wouldn't be satisfied anywhere else. And I love the earth. I love the ground. Now, a lot of people love it because it's worth money, but I don't never consider the money or what it'll grow or nothing like that. I just love it. I love the contours of it and love to walk over it.
I didn't see anything else like it. You know, I didn't see kind of an encyclopedic look at mountain culture. And I also saw the opportunity to, you know, there's all these hillbilly stereotypes in Hollywood. I was asking everybody I knew, what's the most appalling hillbilly stereotype thing you've seen on TV or in a movie? Trying to find that, and we collected hundreds. We even got the little Bugs Bunny characters doing a scene from Deliverance, which was pretty amazing. You know, I always call Mountaineer my opus to West Virginia. It was kind of a gift. It was a gift to me to be able to do it, and it was a gift to the people of West Virginia. It was kind of a love letter to West Virginia.
In recent years, Nakashima has worked on documentaries about Appalachian music like Blind Alfred Reed and Clifftop.
You know, you look, listening for the chord changes, listening for the rhythm, and then once you kind of get into the groove, then you stop thinking. Then you stop thinking. When you close your eyes and you just kind of, some people at these late night jams at Clifftop and elsewhere, you know, they consider it to be kind of like a mantra. You know, you just kind of get this large group of people getting this rolling, repetitive tune and rhythm. You know, you want to get to where you're not thinking about it.
One of the things I like about documentaries is you get to find the best people that exist, if they're within driving distance, in the topic. And you get to, you know, you get to have this privileged conversation with these people. And you get to share that with people who, you know, you ordinarily wouldn't be able to sit at the kitchen table with Irene McKenney or Denise Giardina or John Williams, you know, all the great people I interviewed, Kate Long, and have them give their best arguments about why West Virginia is so fantastic. And give, like, really in-depth analysis that, you know, you could only present in a documentary.
And when asked about some of his favorite experiences using a camera, he recalls one moment in which he caught a glimpse of nature.
One of my favorite things that I did over the years is the simplest thing I did. And it was Steve Lawson and Betsy Lawson. And I went to their house at sunrise. And they have a incredible bird feeder. And I just recorded their voices. And we just looked at what birds were flying up to their feeder. And that was like just a 6-minute thing. And it was just beautiful in its simplicity.
Chip Hitchcock worked with Nakashima on two recent documentaries, West Virginia, Road to Statehood, and Frank Kern's American Correspondent. Hitchcock says Nakashima shows in all of his pieces a strong sense of compassion.
I think what separates him from other really talented filmmakers is he also has a huge heart, and he uses that heart all the time in all of his shows to get at the human aspects of each one of his documentaries and to celebrate that. And he does an incredible job of that. He builds emotion really well using his heart.
Nakashima is working on a new hour-long documentary about West Virginia's children who live in poverty. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Beneduccio in Morgantown.
And you can listen to an extended version of this story with more clips from John's documentaries on our website, wvpublic.org. There you can also find extra audio, photos of John, and video clips of some of his documentaries. Once again, that's our new website, wvpublic.org. While John Nakashima was named Best Filmmaker at the West Virginia Filmmakers Festival this past weekend, the honor for Best Short Film went to Miracle Boy, which was shot in Greenbrier County. Producer Jason Brown says he'll always be a West Virginia filmmaker despite his Georgia address. Jessica Lilly joined Brown for a special viewing at Concord University last week.
Young boys are running through a cornfield as they yell. They're looking for Miracle Boy, another young boy who is kneeling to hide from the would-be bullies. Dialogue is limited, filled instead with sounds of West Virginia mountain country. Concord student Cassandra Malchinoff says it brought her a new appreciation for film.
It definitely made me feel at home while I was watching it.
The storyline follows a young boy who is injured in a farming accident and then bullied by other boys. But more than that, producer Jason Brown says it's about doing the right thing.
The story was about a young boy taking accountability for his actions. I think at the end of the day, what we were trying to get across is the humanity in that one young boy and seeing his mistake and making up for it.
Bullying has made national headlines in recent years after pushing some children to commit suicide, and West Virginia is not immune. Although it wasn't Brown's intention, Miracle Boy has been used by counselors and anti-bullying advocates across the country. Malchinoff plans to show it to other students at Concord.
I'm so passionate about anti-bullying because I see it here on Concord's campus, and the fact that it goes from that age and it just continues to build even into college. This film is a definite example you can see or use to show that it's not what you want to do. You know, bullying is so hard, and it really puts a damper on someone's life. So I'm definitely going to use this film as an RA to do anti-bullying in it.
Brown is a native West Virginian and Concord graduate. He currently teaches communication courses at Valdosta State University in Georgia, but stays true to his roots by encouraging West Virginians to see past and beyond the mountainous borders.
We often don't fulfill our own sort of possibility because here in southern West Virginia, a lot of times we get stuck sort of in the mountains and we don't see what's really possible. And you have to believe in what's there. You have to see it and believe it and then believe in yourself. And then the other half of that really, I believe, is create your own opportunities.
States across the country offer different levels and types of tax incentives to filmmakers. While states like North Carolina are debating whether to continue giving tax breaks and how big they should be, West Virginia's program is relatively underused. The director of West Virginia Film Office, Pam Haynes, says just last year, Governor Earl Ray Tomlin spearheaded an effort to reduce the amount of money offered through the Film Industry Investment Act, which was originally $10 million.
Our program had yet to surpass $5 million in any of the tax years since it was implemented, then it made sense to have that reduced to $5 million.
The program offers about a 30% tax credit to filmmakers based on the cost of a film, with a minimum spending requirement of $25,000. Jason Brown is familiar with filmmaker tax credits in several states and says West Virginia is one of the most competitive.
This is a good thing, but it tends to be like everything else. Why would you put that much aside if not enough people are actually using it? We need to be using it. It's a great opportunity. It's a great resource. You know, I'm not thinking we're going to have The Walking Dead show up in Buchanan or anything, but it could. Why not?
Brown hopes more people will realize the opportunity for filmmaking in the mountains of West Virginia.
The two best things we have going for us with Miracle Boy, it's pretty and the sound is amazing. But I'll tell you what, it was real easy. All we had to do was point the camera because so much of Greenbrier County is beautiful. And you just had to point the camera in the right direction and turn the microphone on.
Still, Brown suspects the biggest challenge or barrier for filmmakers in the state is the same as it is for him, infrastructure.
So much of the industry anymore, you don't have to be in Hollywood. But if we don't have the internet, we don't have the air flights, there's the investment here, I will stay. I will come running back. We have a lot of people that can do things from here and touch the world. They all want to come back and make movies, but what they need is investors. They need support. And gosh, just in general, we need West Virginians to support West Virginia more and more.
The festival run of Miracle Boy is expected to end after two more screenings. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Jessica Lilly in Athens.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ben Aduccio. Our director is Bob Powell. I'm Beth Voorhees.